Says we're going live. Hey, you're live. What's up, everyone? Aaron Negler here, Cheesehead TV. I hope you're all enjoying Memorial Day, honoring those who came before us in any way you see fit. Salute to you, to them, and hello to everyone in the comments. Good to see everybody. I hope you're all having a fine end to the holiday weekend. Back at the grind tomorrow for some of us, for others, who knows, but good to see everybody. What happens if Thompson does not draft Rodgers? Wow. Way to start us off there, Joey the Jaguar. Who knows? I mean, who does he draft instead? Does he get Brett Favre a weapon? Does that weapon put them over the top? I mean, could have gone any way, right? Could have been fantastic. Maybe they win another Super Bowl with Brett. Maybe it all falls apart after Brett ends up maybe playing a few more years in Green Bay rather than demanding his, you know, retirement slash trade to the Vikings, which clearly was never going to happen with Thompson, but he found his way there eventually. Maybe all of that goes away, but maybe he hangs on past his effectiveness and, you know, the franchise is where the Dolphins have been since Dan Marino retired and constantly chasing a new possibility at the quarterback position. There are no, you know, right ways to go about it, obviously. But, hey, you know, if Brian Gutekunst is sold on Jordan Love, I love the idea of getting out ahead of it, so to speak. Now, he's got to be right. Jordan's got to develop. But, hey, man, I like where they're at. David Dubois, Nags. David, what's up? Robin is looking for his or her socks. I'm not sure which, but if anybody sees a pair of socks lying around, Robin would like to find them. Everyone is concerned about wide receivers, but I was more surprised they didn't land an offensive tackle prospect. Am I wrong in thinking it's potentially a big problem? I mean, you worry about what you want to worry about, right? It could be a problem, sure, but they also have three offensive linemen that they drafted. Now, obviously, most, if not all of them, project to the interior, but I think Runyon could play tackle in a pinch in the NFL. But yeah, I did expect them to take a tackle earlier in the draft. The fact that they didn't, I think the position itself was pretty damn deep in this draft class, and you saw a lot of tackles come off the board. Probably just the value just didn't fit wherever, you know, whenever they were on the clock. So they're not going to reach for somebody. I think we saw that with wide receiver. But I also think they've got enough talent on hand that they can get through whatever they need to get through. You can't always be throwing out premier talent at every position, right? And having David Bakhtiari and Brian Bulaga for as long as they did was a pretty damn nice luxury to have. If you look around the league, if you have one competent, I'm not even talking all pro, I'm not even talking Pro Bowl, I'm talking competent. If you have one competent tackle, you are ahead of the game. I mean, there is so much bad offensive line play around the league. The Packers had an ultimate luxury for quite a long time with Bakhtiari and Bulaga. So I don't think it's going to be a massive drop-off after Bulaga. I do think there obviously will be a drop-off, but I still think they've got enough talent between Wagner and ability to kick out Turner. Who knows what happens with the rookies? And hell, they showed under McCarthy, you know, this personnel group, they find offensive linemen that are versatile enough where they played a game against the Bears a couple years ago on a Thursday night where they played four guards and a center and won the game. So I tend to think they'll be okay, but I understand looking at the draft and saying, wish we could have got a tackle. But, you know, that's pretty much true of every position that you miss out on, because you go into every draft, right, saying you don't want your team to reach. You don't want, because that's how bad picks happen, right? But then when they don't make a selection of a certain personnel group, you think, really would have liked to have gotten a tackle or a wide receiver. But ultimately, they're following their board, and that's what you want them to do. Jonathan, hey, Nags, since it takes tight ends a couple of seasons to get acclimated, is DeGuara's best shot at making an impact at the fullback role? I think he'll make a impact kind of all around. I think he'll be asked to do a lot. It's really going to come down to how much he can absorb and how much they trust him. I do think, yes, at fullback slash H-back, because I do think he's going to play a hell of a lot more H-back than anything else. Probably he will be given the opportunity to compete and or affect the game more. But look, if he comes into camp and absorbs the playbook and is producing on the field, they'll throw him out there and he'll have every opportunity to, you know, be productive, make a difference, etc. But because he's going to be asked to do so much, to be so versatile, you have to think there will be a learning curve. And that's why I keep saying I think Sternberger is the one who will be productive, who will be the quote-unquote star of that group, because he has a year in the system. He's got a year working with Aaron. And he doesn't have the learning curve that DeGuara is going to have. Frank, thanks for the super chat. Does Belaga's departure have to do with more than just money? 3 years, $30 million doesn't seem like a whole lot to retain, considering Turner's $28 million and Wagner's $11 million. I mean, a little bit more to do with money than it's about money in the sense that they don't want to. They didn't want to pay that to a guy for his third contract, who has, you know, more often than not been able to make it through 16 games. Now, obviously, he did last year, although he did miss a bunch of time. Right, he played all the regular season and then missed the playoff game at home. But you know, when you're handing out those contracts, especially when you're going through free agency and or extending people, you are projecting what guys will do in the future. It's not about what they've done in the past. And in the Packers' determination, you know, 3 years for Wagner at that number made a hell of a lot more sense than 3 years for Belaga at that number. And look, considering their injury histories and where they probably are in their respective careers, I can't fault the Packers for that, especially when they have so many mouths yet to feed in the sense of Kenny Clark, David Bakhtiari, probably Aaron Jones, maybe Kevin King. That's a lot of young players that you still need to pay. So I don't think, I think obviously money is part of it, but all age and injury prone and blah, 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 all that factors in. Bryson, thanks for the super chat. I feel the 49ers will take a dip this year. I mean, yeah, it's a possibility. I mean, I don't know what you mean by a dip. I think they're still going to be an incredibly tough football team, and they're going to be very, very good. The Packers will undoubtedly have their hands full when they travel out there, especially considering where it falls in the schedule. So, yeah, maybe they do, but I still think they're going to be one of the best teams in the NFC. I mean, hell, the Packers will probably take a dip from 13-3. I still think they'll be a better team. So, who knows? Big Daddy Cool Breeze is here. What's up, man? How you doing? Ooh, good question. Do I think Montrevious Adams makes the team? Oh, boy. The odds got longer this week. No doubt about it. With his arrest, possibility of a suspension hanging over him. We'll see. I mean, if he comes into camp and lights it up, I think that's his best shot. But, you know, with the signing of Hester, hopefully, for Packers' sake, the development of Kingsley Keke, I think he's hanging on by a thread. And it will take... Now, they don't need to cut him right now. I think they will go through camp and see how he does. But the odds got a lot longer after his arrest, no doubt about it. Packers got shafted going to Santa Clara on a Thursday. Thomas, you are not lying. There's no doubt about it. But hey, there's always a tough part of a schedule, right? No schedule is perfect, and schedules never lay out perfectly for any team. You know, the Packers got a tough, you know, that whole stretch there is really tough, but that's part of the gig, man. That's the NFL. And as LaFleur is fond of saying, it's week to week. So they can only do what they can. To quote Rodgers, got to control the controls. And what they can control is their preparation and executing their game plan. That's about it. Is Dak worth $40 million a year? Yes. He's worth more than that. People freaking out about him asking, what was it, $45 million in that last year. Do people understand how the salary cap works? Do they get, and I'm not, this is not on you, Travis. I'm just saying, in general, when you see the pushback to Dak refusing, like, and of course the Cowboys leak this shit as much as they can to paint Dak in a bad light. But it's like, yeah, is he going to be worth $45 million by the time that year of the contract comes up? 1,000,000,000%, yes. I mean, there's zero question with the way that the cap is going to go up and has gone up every year. And yes, is it going to go up less this year than maybe originally thought? Probably. That's the reporting around it. But by the time Dak reaches that final year of the contract, 100% comparative to where other quarterbacks will be. Remember when Aaron Rodgers signed his last deal, highest paid quarterback of all time, blah, 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 blah. It took like 3 minutes for that to be out of date. Quarterbacks get signed every year. Every year the number goes up. Every year the paradigm shifts. I mean, Mahomes, all these guys are going to sign deals and things are going to be totally different. So yes, he's 1,000,000,000% worth what he's asking for. He's smart to turn it down. And hey, I'm all for it if he just wants to play under the franchise tag and go the Kirk Cousins route, because he's a hell of a lot better than Kirk Cousins. And he absolutely shouldn't sign something below market value, especially projected wise. Like, yeah, I'm all in on Dak, man. I think he's playing. I think he's being smart. The memory of 2019 Packer games in San Francisco makes me want to drink. Salud, Dave. I'm down with that. Yeah. Do the Packers continue to run the 46 Bear defense in order to stop the run? Frank, that's a good question, especially in light of Patton's words the other day when I asked about the dime personnel. I mean, LaFleur mentioned that in his post-game press conference after the NFC Championship game. If you go back and you watch that, which I have because I'm a fucking nerd, you know, he mentions eight in the box and how the 49ers should not have been able to run against the Packers in a lot of those formations and or personnel groupings. But they ran all over them. Run all over them, they did. Will they play more bear or the same amount of bear? Probably, just because that's Petten's ballywick. And I do think there will be some slight adjustment in personnel usage, especially up front. But for the most part, I think they view it as there was a good stretch there during the season where they actually did a pretty decent job against the run. And they're going to look to that and try to expand that, obviously, and make that more of a consistent thing throughout the season. But, yeah, I mean, I thought Rob's question was a good one when he asked about, you know, the fact that it's a copycat league and will teams now look at that game and try and replicate what the 49ers did. And I thought Petten's response was pretty spot on in the sense that not everybody has their personnel. And I do think there's a truth in between there. I do think teams are going to try and run, especially on the perimeter against the Packers, quite a little bit early on in the season until they prove that they've learned their lesson and they know how to stop it. Now, is 46/bear the answer? And look, that's not even – they don't even run pure 46. They're not running Buddy Ryan stuff, but they are running stuff out of that tree because that's where Petten comes from. He comes from Rex Ryan's philosophy, et cetera. Yeah, I think that will be – maybe not the jumping off point, but that will be a large chunk of what they want to do, no doubt. Are you for or against the onside kick rule? Sam, thanks for asking about that. I'm all for it. I'm all for it. I love the idea. And I know Judy Batista reported, I think it was earlier this morning on NFL Network, there are owners who are worried that it's too gimmicky or whatever. But, you know, it's the year 2020. We're in the middle of a pandemic. Like, we need gimmicks. We need something to get excited about. We need different kind of ways of working, so to speak. The whole world is changing. Like, ain't your daddy's NFL anymore. Embrace the change. And the other thing they're going to be talking about, and for those of you who don't know, the thing on the table, so to speak, that they're going to be voting on this week is allowing teams, and it'll be a one-year trial basis, much like pass interference review last year, which thankfully is not coming back. Teams, if they want to, rather than attempt an onside kick, they can try to convert 4th and 15 from deep in their own end. So obviously if they fail, they give the ball over with great field position to the opponent. I'm all for it. I love it. You saw the XFL kind of implement that. I think it's a really good idea, especially considering how the successful onside kick has like really taken a dip percentage wise. This would be a great way to allow teams to, okay, draw up some 4th and 15 plays, some 15-yard conversion plays, and try and make it happen. You know, if you get into a desperate spot, if you get into a spot late in the game where you need to steal a possession, you need to get another score, et cetera, or the opportunity for another score, I'm all for it. I love it. And then the other thing they're going to be voting on is the sky judge. And the idea of having one official for every game who is operating through the lens of a kind of sky cam. And as far as the logistics and or what their purview will be, I think that is still up for discussion. But they will have an ability to kind of not overrule, but bring things to it to the ref's attention. And the worry, I guess, is reportedly is that, well, you've been giving 17 people a lot of power. And I don't think it's a sense of like, and who will these 17 people be? Do you take the best refs off the field and make them sky judges, et cetera? I think with as much as the scrutiny on the game itself, I find it hard to believe that it could be any worse than what we've seen coming out of New York and 345 Park, when they have taken what should be obvious things and gone against the grain, so to speak. And yes, there's blowback and there's outrage on Twitter or whatever, but you know, the game chugs on. We still keep on with our lives. I think having a sky judge will be no different. Will there be complaints? Of course there will. Will there be conspiracy theories? Oh, obviously there will be. But I don't mind it if there's blazingly obvious video that the entire world is privy to and the NFL is utilizing that rather than ignoring it. I'm all for that. Why did Runyon fall so far? Tape looks good. I think he, in any, not any other season, but most other years, he probably would have been a day two pick. But because of the talent on hand, especially at offensive tackle, but along the offensive line in general, I just think he got pushed down. I mean, you look at, I think you look out like 5-10 years from now, this class is going to be remembered for the offensive tackle talent. A lot has been made about the wide receiver talent, and I do think that is a very real thing, and those players will undoubtedly be talked about. But just look at how many offensive tackles went in the first round. There was a ton of offensive line talent in this draft, and I just think he was a victim of that. He's not an elite physical specimen, but he is a very damn good football player. Man, hell, I'm happy that he's with the Packers. All right, I'll take one or two more, and I'm going to have to jump, guys. What one NFL player would have helped the Packers the most this year? You mean this year, like, coming up, or this year, last year? Coming up? What one NFL player? Jeez Louise. I don't know. I mean, can I take anybody? Give me Bobby Wagner. How's that? He probably solves a lot of shit on defense. How competent are the Packers' brain trust when it comes to making changes? They seem to be behind the curve at times. Capers, McCarthy, Thompson, all outstaying their welcome. Will Pettine be next? Well, Frank, the Pettine decision is a very different person because that's on Matt LaFleur. As far as McCarthy, Thompson, etc., Capers is on McCarthy. There is zero question about that. He stuck with him too long. I understood at the time why he did so. He didn't think it was on Capers. He thought it was on Thompson, you know? And I understand why Murphy stuck with Thompson as long as he did. They were very successful, and they did a very good job throughout the years of turning things around if they had a bad start. They made the NFC Championship game in 2016 after a rough start, blah, 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 blah. So I understand why people look at it and say they stuck with people too long. They value continuity, and they won a ton of games valuing that. They're not like other teams. And I always say this, and I said this earlier this offseason when people were talking about they didn't draft a wide receiver and blah, blah, blah. And they, the big brouhaha was how they haven't selected a wide receiver in the first round since Javon Walker. How many football games have they won since then? And at what point does the conversation become, look, the Packers do things differently than everybody else, but maybe that's why they're so successful. And I know they don't have six rings like Tom Brady, and that's always the paradigm that people look through erroneously, but that's what the comparison is. But they're always compared to the Patriots, but never the other 31 teams, who they have lapped numerous times. They win a lot of football games because of the way they operate. So instead of saying, you know, oh, well, maybe they hang on to these guys for too long. Maybe because they held on for so long, the continuity of which produced a lot of winning football games. That's just me. And I understand no one else, not no one else, but a lot of other people disagree. A lot of people do not share those sentiments. I totally get it. I am a product of my upbringing. I am a product of decades of failure in Green Bay. So to watch a team be as consistently successful as the Packers have been throughout the last 25 plus years, I appreciate it. And I get why they want to be and why they enjoy and or encourage continuity. That's just me. All right, guys, I'm going to jump. Thanks so much for all the questions. Thanks for hanging out with me on this Memorial Day. Go enjoy a beverage with your friends, family, whatever. I'll be back tomorrow. Salud, everyone. Oh, and hey, Patreon members, I'll be having a Patreon Zoom happy hour tomorrow at 6:30 p.m. Eastern. Hope you can stop by. If you are not a Patreon member, please consider jumping on board Patreon, patreon.com/cheeseheadtv. $5 a month is all we ask. It supports everything we do at Cheesehead TV, and we have great Zoom sessions once a week during the offseason. That's a ton of fun. You can challenge me to a Madden game if you want. But hey, if you can't jump on board Patreon, I totally get it. In lieu of that, please consider hitting like on this video. Subscribe to the channel. Tell your friends. Tell your family. Cheesehead TV, we're devoted to Green Bay Packers fans worldwide. Thanks a lot, everybody. Have a great night.